All right, welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. The Orange mission is to unite Canadians around the core problem that we all face today in this country, which is broken money. And this podcast is a place for Canadians to have conversations about how fixing the money fixes Canada. My name is Nick. I'm speaking to Lucas in this episode. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with others or donating to the Canadian Orange Party to support the show. You can go to CanadianOrangeParty.com to do that. Current block height is 925,301. Hash rate is sitting at 1,149 exahashes per second. And one Canadian peso currently buys you 790 sats, which for those who don't know, is a small fraction of a Bitcoin. There is 100 million sats in one Bitcoin. And today, Lucas and I are going to talk about how sound money changes parenting. So we're just going to start by sharing some general thoughts, and then we're going to dive into whatever rabbit holes and specific tangents come up. And I think to start with, I just want to mention that in our last episode together, we talked about how sound money changes health. And I think being healthy is the primary way. Number one, being healthy is the primary way you can show up better as a parent. But I actually think being healthy is a precursor to even parenting, right? Because when people aren't healthy and their bodies are stressed, fertility rates decline. So people literally biologically cannot have children or more children, or it's more difficult, I should say. Having kids is a really low time preference endeavor. So I think even just sound money might even be a precursor to even people being interested in having a family and having kids. Because if the future looks terrible, why bring another life into the world? If the future looks bright and optimistic, and you have a low time preference with how you go about life, starting a family, having children, is much more appealing. And I think from a socioeconomic perspective, when life is more affordable, people have more kids. In general, when life is really difficult and you're hardly making ends meet yourself, you can't even imagine the idea of bringing another life into the world, taking on more responsibility and more expenses. So I think even just as a preamble to just kind of general thoughts, I think, health is a precursor to even becoming a parent. And if you haven't listened to our last episode, I highly encourage you do, because it'll be a good foundation for what we talk about in this episode. And for the sake of avoiding being repetitive, we won't necessarily dive into those specific issues. I think just in general, that aside, the fact that sound money might be a precursor to health and to therefore even the incidence of parenting, I think when individuals have less time stolen from them, they have more time available to spend with their kids. That might be like the main sort of theme that comes to mind when it comes to how to sound money change parenting. And again, if you're not healthy, you can't show up for your kids. And, you know, I think the last point I'll make in terms of general thoughts is just this idea that when people have less financial anxiety, when people have less stress about money, when people have to work less to make ends meet, families are better off, right? Children have more time with their parents. The time that they have is with a parent who is feeling good, not under huge stress, not under huge pressure, is able to be present with them, doesn't have this loop in the background running in their mind of how am I going to put food on the table next month, right? So I think in general, those are like the big things that sort of come to mind, and as it relates to parenting. Love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. I was thinking about scarcity and parenting and how much, for those of you who have kids, how much stress is caused by the potential destruction of your property by your children. If you're struggling financially and the kids are maybe, you know, they're bouncing off the walls and you're worried about them breaking things, and it's on every level of your parenting is is touching your financial situation, the way that you interact with your kids, like you said. Like if you feel like you're in a world of scarcity, your interactions with your children, if they accidentally dump water on some valuable piece of electronics, or if they accidentally break something with a baseball bat, which may or may not have happened in my house, it will change the way you are interacting with them if your mindset is one of abundance versus one of scarcity. And obviously, that's not to say that you're going to be just like letting your kids run around your living room with squirt guns or whatever, but it's actually a shift that I've had to make consciously since getting into Bit like since adopting a Bitcoin standard in my own life, where my hackles will go up, my stress level will rise when they're doing something that is going to confer some sort of loss to the family. Like financially, if I have to replace something expensive, or if the door is open, and heat is escaping the house, these things are, and they leave the door open. That would typically cause a stress response in me to preserve family resources. And just consciously having to say that this is not a emergency. It is okay for the door to be open right now. It's actually, I don't know, try it. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think that it does influence parenting at just the most fundamental level, because if you're yelling at your kids, you got to make up for it with two, three positive, positive experiences if you're getting frustrated with them. And it's like, or that figure might actually be much higher. I don't know the psychology of it. I don't know how
Sounds
valid
about
that
right.
is, but you have to repair, and you have to, it just changes the fundamental like the way that you interact with your kids. In my experience, some people are also just lower, have a lower ambient stress level, and that's good. Like if you're the kind of person that doesn't worry about these things, that is awesome. I'm glad. I'm personally not. I can be very guarded about these things, and I'm having to consciously correct that because I am not in a position of scarcity. I'm not saying I'm super well off, but I do not worry about the future in the same way that I once did. The parallels to diet and parenting are very interesting. The relationship between them as well, how they interact, how if you eat healthy, you're going to be less bored. I'm trying to find a way to phrase it that doesn't make me sound like a terrible parent, but if you have a ambient positive mental health and outlook because of what you're eating, which it will change your mental health status. If you eat properly, you will have a better time with your children, and they will have a better time with you, and you will foster a better relationship with them, which is incredibly important. I want to dive into later the idea of holding on to your kids, which is a book.
Gabor Mate.
Yeah, exactly. And the relationship that our society has created with our children. I think we can probably get into that later, but just a couple things I want to touch on. Yeah, schooling will change the education system. I think among Bitcoiners, for those of you who are uninitiated in this, I think there's a kind of a disgusting film to draw back and to look under the hood of our education system, which is corrupted by money and bad money, teaching our kids awful, evil ideas, in my opinion. And yeah, the incentives are really misaligned there. And what you mentioned about optimism for the future and the fear of the future influencing people's rates of fertility, not in a medical sense, but just their desire to have children, cannot be understated. I've heard it from many friends of mine who have told me that having kids is an unimaginable thing in the world we live in today, which is a monstrously it's not an evil idea on their part. I don't think that it comes from a good place in their heart, but it's an idea that is foisted on them from the corruption of money that's sort of that comes about due to the corruption of money. And if we can get one single person to have a child because of a sound money standard, every single episode of this podcast would be worthwhile. Every moment that I've spent thinking about this or talking about it would be worth it just for that one human being brought into existence.
Well said.
And then the final thing maybe to kind of throw out there, that's an interesting idea, because there's all sorts of tensions, there's all sorts of things that where I'm questioning, okay, is this sound money that's influencing this? What is happening here in terms of rates of fertility? Because a lot of people might be thinking, well, in nations where their currency is absolutely terrible and there's poverty everywhere, people are having nine children. So how does that square with this idea of people's rates of fertility, people wanting to have children? How does that influence it? Because it seems to be kind of the opposite. And I think we can come to some conclusions about that, which can clear that up for people. Although I haven't fully reconciled in my head, I think it'll be useful to talk about it in this conversation.
Let's hash it out, because that's a good point that I hadn't actually spent a whole lot of time thinking of. But immediately when you said it, I started thinking about all these different sort of variables that create that outcome. But just to talk, as you were talking, a few things came to mind. I think the first thing that came to mind was this idea of when your time's not being stolen because you're not using fraudulent fiat currency that steals your time at an exponential rate. You actually have time. I think most people are just being parents, right? So you have kids, you live a stressful life, you're working, you're having to work more and more for less and less because you're basing your life on fraudulent currency. You are just being a parent. You are just trying to not drown, trying to show up as best you can for your kids. And I have compassion and empathy for everyone doing their best because I truly believe everyone's doing their best. But you don't actually have the space, time, and bandwidth to create space between being a parent and thinking about parenting. Because when you're just being a parent, you're often just repeating the same template that you grew up in as a child with parents. And the circumstances that your parents faced may have been stressful. And some of their parenting style may have been a stress response. And if you're applying that as the default parenting style, you're essentially perpetuating that pass down of unsound parenting due to whatever circumstances. And so I think one thing, when you have more time and when your time is being protected and you have to work less and less to make ends meet, which is what actually happens under a sound money standard, you have time to move out of the, even just for momentarily, it might just be a brief period of time, move out of being a parent and think about parenting styles. Think about your values that you're passing on to your kids. Think about, debrief interactions you have with your kids that maybe you didn't feel good about. Think like, what led to that? So that was one thing that came to mind. Second thing is when you're talking about this idea of, closing the door, stop letting the heat out, turning the lights off when you're out of the room. Like, these are all things that I experienced as a child. I experienced punishment if I forgot to turn the light off or forgot to close the door. Not like brutal punishment, but I remember vivid experiences. And it's almost like when you're out of the scarcity mindset and you're in a you have space, you have a financial buffer where that's not going to be, that doesn't need to elicit a catastrophic response. You get to respond to those situations instead of reacting to them. And I think parents who respond to their kids instead of reacting to their kids out of a place of stress is like a fundamentally different household, like different way that a family operates. And then the last thing, well, two brief last things. When you talk about food, feeding your children is one of the main responsibilities of a parent. Feeding your children nutritious food that is good for their bodies, that keeps them healthy mentally and physically, is insanely important. And in a fiat world of fraudulent money that constantly steals from people, we have to degrade the quality of our foods more and more and more to the point where people are literally just putting something in the microwave to feed their kids because that's all they can afford. Whereas under a sound money standard, where your money goes further over time, and preserves their purchasing power. You're able to, instead of stepping down the ladder of food quality, you're actually able to ascend the ladder of food quality to go for better and better sources of food, better and better types of food, quantities of food that actually gives your kids enough nutrients to counterbalance all the energy they're expending being kids. And then the last thing was just this idea that I think in the screen world of today, a consequence that happens when parents don't have bandwidth, say someone's at their absolute limit, they just came from working 14 hours in their second job because that's what they need to do. They come home, their kids want to play with them. Their kids are full of energy because they've been waiting for their parents to come home to like play or interact. If the parent has nothing left, it is so easy to turn on a TV or give them a phone or an iPad. And that just deprives the kid of so many human nutrients that come from interacting with their parents, not to mention all the teaching that happens in those interactions, but potentially a degradation of their values. And like whatever they're watching is going to impact them. If you're not teaching your kids, what they're watching is going to teach them. And if you're not even careful about what your kids are watching, you might be shocked to realize the things your kids are learning that are not good, not aligned with your values, not aligned with where you want the world to go. So I think all of those things, like you said, there's no element of parenting that money doesn't touch. Because frankly, I don't think there's anything in the day-to-day life of a human that money doesn't touch to some extent. And parenting is just a really, the more once you mention this as a topic, I've been thinking about it. And the more I think about it, the more I realize, wow, it's profound the effect that broken money has at the family level, which then creates the individual atomic elements that create the state of society. So if the family degrade, if the relationship between kids and parents degrades, families degrade, then the atomic source of civilization degrades. And it's pretty confronting, I would say.
Yeah, one of the key things about this sound money idea is that what is good for you and your family ends up being good for society on a broader scale. And you're just every family that adopts this way of thinking is just going to improve the situation for all other families. And like this, for people that may be skeptical just getting into this about the primacy of money, where it seems like, oh, because we're interested in this topic, it just has this knock-on effect. We just kind of see, I don't know if maybe the analogy of like to a hammer, everything looks like a nail kind of thing, like everything looks like a money nail to us. But if you think about what money is, which is always just, it's such a fruitful question in our lives. I don't think people ask it enough. I think one of the better definitions of it, I don't know if it's coined by Jack Mallers, but I've heard him say it a lot. It's your time and energy in abstracted form. If your time and your energy, which is basically everything that you have on kind of a first principle kind of level, is being stolen from you by people in government or by, yeah, like if it's being debased, it will change the way that you interact with everything in your life. And I think it's worth kind of clarifying that, maybe reinforcing it. We've probably said it once or twice, but the primacy of money and the way we interact with our children is not to be understated.
And I think that only sounds extreme, radical, hyperbolic to people who have not done their homework to understand why that is so.
And fair
Like,
enough, because they've been lied to their entire lives about it.
100%. And we also, if you look back at your old self, however many years you've been into Bitcoin, add a year, look back at yourself at that point and try and hear what we just said through that version of Lucas, probably you would have thought it was crazy too. I definitely would have. So this isn't something we're saying flippantly. This isn't a flighting opinion. This is sort of an insight that's formed after years and years of just taking the time to think this through, studying money for literally years. I've been studying money for years, and I still continue to be amazed at the insights I can have when I realize, the second, third, fourth order effects that money has on society. If it degrades, this is where you end up way down the line. If it improves, you can essentially take the inverse of what the degradation was and see that as the likely outcome. When you invert the money from lies and fraud to truth and freedom, you invert the incentives. Therefore, you pretty much invert the outcomes. And that might not hold 100% correlation all the way through, but I have yet to see an occasion where that isn't the true result. And again, you have to have the bandwidth and desire and curiosity to even dive into these things, to walk into these rabbit holes with patience and a low time preference to even get to that realization. And so hopefully we're able to convey these insights that we've had and inspire people to be curious enough to verify it themselves, right? Don't trust, verify. But just know that we're not just saying random things based on flighting opinions that we heard somewhere else. I think you and I both form our own opinions and thoughts, and try and share them honestly. And so that's really what this podcast is about.
Yeah, and I think that some people who are more skeptical might view it as a species of greed, where all these people are just obsessed with money and they just want to amass more for themselves. I think that's like in certain people's political leanings are going to be more responsive to that view. But when it comes down to it, regardless of your, this is happening whether you value your wealth or not, your degradation, this is you're being stolen from, and you require money in your life. I hope that's not like it's obvious, of course, but it doesn't come out of this desire to preserve wealth and hoard it. It comes from a desire to provide a better life for your family. And like we mentioned last time, it actually turns into there. It's like there's this strange inversion that happens because I am. Who seems more greedy? The guy who's flipping out on his kids because the door is open, or the guy that does not care that the door is open because he has sound money? One of those is a greedy person. And the person who does not adopt the sound money standard is going to exhibit all of the negative qualities that we associate with the greedy, yet they will have less. It's really counterintuitive. I grew up as a liberal. I went to a liberal university. I was very much steeped in this. I'm sympathetic to anyone who's coming at this from that lens. I like to say that it's like for people who are hardcore communists, who are like very much on a different end of the spectrum as me. Like this is for you as well. And I hope that makes sense. I think it's really important to understand that it will turn everything that you think about in terms of greed upside down just by valuing your time and your energy in this way.
Yeah, and I've heard Seb Bunny say this quite a few times. I'm interviewing him on the podcast tomorrow, and he said the odd irony is that when we fix the money, it gives us permission to stop obsessing and fixating over money.
Yeah.
The only reason we do that is because it's broken and we always have less. Therefore, it must take up a large percentage. I mean, you could even say that the more the money degrades, the more money must be a larger portion of our daily mind share because our survival depends on it. And the more our money preserves purchasing power, the less of our mind share, our daily mind share, our daily energy, is required to put towards money because we just don't have to care about it anymore. It's just the thing we use to trade with each other and store our time. And if it's not broken, it doesn't have to always suck us in. So it's like by fixing the money, we can stop obsessing over money and start talking about real things that are meaningful and bring us joy. It's like, that's probably sounds crazy to people who don't really understand this yet. But I think, like you said, Jeff Booth always says this, like, this is not an option. This is not a negotiation. This is being imposed on you. The longer it takes for you to be curious enough to learn about it, the harsher the imposition is going to be, because the more your life will have degraded, and the less of a head start you will have with adopting sound money. As the rest of the world adopts it, it lifts everyone up. And the longer you wait to opt into the honest ledger, money's just a ledger that says who owns what. Bitcoin is just an honest ledger. Fiat is a fraudulent ledger. The longer you operate on the fraudulent ledger, the more fraud you will be struck with. It's that simple.
Well said.
Okay, where do you want to go now?
I think I don't want to have a Dunning-Kruger kind of I don't I'm not I'm certainly no expert in it, but
I'm
I know
banishing you from saying I'm not an expert in things, by
yeah, sorry.
the way. You're not allowed to say that because
Enough
I,
of that.
frankly, I get it. I get it. I'm just kind of joking. I'm slightly joking
No.
because, frankly, you have a way better understanding about how the world works than most self-proclaimed experts that I know. And almost everyone I know who is a authority by proof of work and understanding, not by, credentials, usually says, I don't fully understand this, or there's people who know way more about this, or I'm no expert. And those are the people, that's usually my signal to be like, I gotta listen to this person because they probably know way more than they admit they know. And the people who know the most think they know the least. And this is just the way it is. So,
Yeah, I think, I guess rewording that to say that I don't claim to have absolute knowledge about what I'm saying is probably more appropriate. I know
we
that
can
this
preface it
is
that we are both still learning about everything.
yeah, especially parenting. I think that I will be learning about parenting until the day that I die. And so this idea of holding on to your kids is basically this idea that fostering healthy relationships with your children and the idea of what a healthy relationship with your children, I think, is the crux of that, is very important in today's society and much of the Western world. We have this idea that's normalized that a children's primary influence is their peers, and that parents are striving in vain, mostly, to shape their children, and that children rebel as a matter of course, that it's actually some people will say it's desirable for their children to rebel against them. It's some sign of growth and independence that they're fostering within themselves. There may be some gradation of that that's true, where you do want them to push back against you. I'm agnostic as to that, but I think that we vastly overstate the need for people's children to be influenced by their peers, and that really developing strong relationships, playing with your children a lot well into their teens, spending lots of quality time with them will naturally draw them to hoist aboard your values, which is just very important. It's also natural, as is argued in this book, where societies that are that don't have the same daycare, in school, work three jobs, see your kids for an hour in the evening before tucking them in. Those societies that don't have this standard for parenting see that. They see the ability to influence a child with your values because, of course, they should. Think about in an evolutionary context or in a yeah, whatever natural context you want to use that adheres to your worldview. Of course, your children should value the wisdom of experience that you have gathered through the same trials that they are going through, and Oftentimes, it's not the case because they are so reliant on their peers. It's basically the Lord of the Flies at school. I don't know if you remember your upbringing. When you're at school, like the teacher's not around, all sorts of shit is flying around. At
It degrades
alarmingly,
into chaos.
it is chaos. And not having some countervailing force of influence on your kids is hugely degrading. It's hugely noticeable. Like if my wife and I are in any period of, let's say, working more, having less of a role in our kids' lives, the amount of brain rot that comes home, the amount of influence from the media that they're exposed to, it inflames, and the quality of interactions between them, they start to argue more, they start to argue more with us, they're more resistant to any sort of input we have as parents. They're not adhering to values of the house. It's obvious. And it's as, in my view, it's as simple as trying to free up your time, which of course comes back to money. Adopting a sound money standard is just the first step in this road to taking back your claim on your child's upbringing and their values, and fostering just good norms in their lives.
Yeah, that was really well said. And I think this whole notion of kids being influenced by peers, even the one crazy thing that is now more relevant than even 15 years ago, is now there's this peer that is tethered to almost all kids, which is social media algorithms. And that is a dark one to explore fully. And the essence of it is that you have companies that have teams of psychologists. Billions of dollars are spent on teams of psychologists whose job it is to express how we can hack human psychology to attract the most attention for the longest period of time. Time on screen is the optimization factor. That's it. The externalities of what is the effect of lots of time on screens? What is the effect of the content, the style of content that hacks human psychology to maximize time on screen is the darkest, most shocking, most disturbing shit. And every kid has that algorithm. That is the electronic peer for all kids, is that. And as peers are influenced by that individually, the behaviors and the things they learn through that ruthless peer, which is algorithmic programming to hijack human attention, is being spun up in actual social peer groups, and those behaviors are being normalized. And that's, I mean, when you see some behavior of kids, like we'll see behavior of kids around if we're out for a walk or if we're at a gathering with families that we don't fully know. It's very obvious to see which ones have been parented and which ones have been screened, screenified. Because there's just no, the, I think the most obvious thing for me is the level of respect that kids have for their parents. If you're not around your kids, if you're not giving them clear direction with values, how can you possibly expect them to respect you? How can you possibly expect them to respond to you with parental authority? I don't think I wouldn't expect them to, and it's very clear to see that many of them don't. And then you see families whose parents are very present, are very intentional, are very focused, are not on their phones all the time. That's like the one key thing that you can almost key in on right away. How much time, when you're around a family, how much time are the parents on a phone? How much time are the kids on a phone? That's like a real good proxy for how good the relationships are going to be amongst the family. And I think it just makes sense when you really think of it as zoomed out level. So it's
Don't
like,
let your kids have a phone.
yeah, give them a dumb
Like,
phone.
do,
Like, be very vigilant as to what your kids are consuming through screens. I think that might be a good way to put it. It doesn't mean no, absolutely no phones, but it carries more responsibility. You have to be a parent to your kids more when you just allow them to be distracted less. When you allow them to be influenced less by their peers, it requires you to step in more as a parent. And I think the fundamental element of fiat money is when you base your life on a fraudulent currency that steals your time, you have exponentially less time to yourself and less time to be a parent. And therefore, your relationship with your kids will degrade and the influence they have from external factors beyond your control will increase. And restoring sound parenting, it's almost like when you adopt sound money is not going to be telling your kids bedtime stories and restoring all your relationships, but it gives
Yeah.
you at least an opportunity to do those things. It's not a guarantee you will do them, but it is the without that, you will be surely not able to do them. It's kind of like the trope, fix the money, fix Canada. Really, what it should say is fix the money and we have a chance to fix Canada. It changes a lot of incentives. So I think a lot of things actually automatically gravitate towards being better without any effort. But it's more so that it gives us an opportunity to be better parents, not necessarily so that it immediately fixes all the problems of parenting, because there's many others to figure out, but we at least have the bandwidth and space to explore those things, to think about parenting and values instead of just being stuck in reactions from being a parent.
Well, exactly. It comes back to the same analogy with food. Is eating healthy, like it is much easier to eat unhealthily than it is to eat healthy. It is much
In
easier
the short term.
to, in the short, yes, and or it appears easier because the sugary foods are plentiful and cheap, and you can access them whenever you want, and they give you that hit of dopamine. And in the same way, parenting is challenging. It requires energy, like you say. And it's not to say that parenting is easy. It requires discipline, and through discipline, you get freedom. You get healthy relationships with your kids. You end up being less stressed about your interactions with your children. In the same way that you're less stressed and you have an easier life when you eat healthy, despite the upfront kind of startup costs, I guess, of doing the work to eat healthier and doing the work to parent better. Yeah.
And even with health, it's like if your kids are eating good food, they're getting good sleep because you're not allowing them to be looking at a screen all day long, including at bedtime. If they are not stressed from, a stressful environment at home, they're going to have a more resilient immune system. Your kids will literally get sick less if you have healthy behaviors programmed into your family software. Because guess what? When your kid gets sick, that's really stressful. And if you're at your absolute limit, that added stress could make you react in a way that is really negative for both you and your kid. So it's almost like I always tell people, the money that most people spend on vet bills, I just spend on my dog's food. And it turns out I have basically no vet bills because my dog's
Yep.
eating healthy and he's moving and he's outside. And the quality of his food largely determines the quality of his health. And I think the same thing exists for humans, where the easy thing in the short term is to get a little bump of mouth pleasure and dopamine and eat the cheap, shitty food. But the long-term cost is suffering and illness because those foods are going to make you sick. And same thing, it's like if you are absent in your kid's life, they are going to become sick mentally, maybe physically. If you're not caring for them and making sure they get good sleep and outlets for play and feel a good connective relationship with you, that's very, if a child doesn't feel connected to their parent, that is stressful for them, right? Even maybe not consciously stressful, but like biologically, that is a major stressor to have a lack of connection to your parent. And major stressors show up as sickness and suppressed immune function and part of me often thinks of all these childhood diseases and sicknesses along the full spectrum, from the common cold to like leukemia. How much of that is related to just parents not being able to show up fully to ensure their kid has a functioning system that can maintain good health? You know, if you accept radical responsibility for the health of your child, it's a really different dynamic. And I'm not saying that to shame anyone. There's no judgment. Like I said, everyone's doing their best. I just think that in a fiat world, your best can sometimes not be good enough to keep your kids healthy and to nourish them and have them grow up into well-rounded, developed adults. And it all stems from the fact that fraudulent currency is stealing your time. So you'll never have enough time to show up to be the parent that maybe you even want to be. And by switching to sound money, which can be done by anyone, any day, at any minute, right? This whole idea, like we're sort of talking about this in the context of if we get enough people to change to sound money on a personal level and on a family level, we will have enough momentum for people to push forward into adopting sound money at a national level. But at the end of the day, it really is a personal choice. It's a personal decision. Everyone does it at a different time. Everyone studies money and discovers Bitcoin at a different point, and that's how it just needs to be. Just don't underestimate the insanely huge positive effects that come from stopping you and your family from being stolen from. And you can literally start that tomorrow or today. Clearly, if you're listening to this, you're already starting. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, there's a, I think getting into the nuts and bolts of what holding on to your kids looks like, what showing up for them looks like might be valuable. I think one of the big things that we're conditioned to do from our own upbringings oftentimes is to use shame as a weapon against our children. To my shame, I have done that many times. And I don't think there's a greater way to push your kids into the arms of their peers than to shame them for misbehavior. You can actually see it. It's actually very painful when you're aware of this. So, but
So give yourself
yeah,
grace.
totally give yourself grace. But just approaching their misbehaviors with curiosity, I think is key. I think that most of us have the experience of the strong desire to do the opposite thing that our parents want us to do when they just shame us and yell at us. A lot of this is probably obvious on some level. It's easier said than done, but I think it's important to note that there's a lot of practical nuts and bolts parenting orientations that are important to apply to this that are just counterintuitive because we grew up oftentimes with parents that are on this fiat standard that don't understand this, that think that, yeah, my orientation towards parenting is very different than the one that I grew up with, and I'm having to reshape it myself, and it's quite the challenge. I definitely feel that all the holdovers from my own upbringing sneaking into my parenting in a lot of ways that I think are just not ideal. But yeah, being honest and having curiosity when your children, letting them know how you feel about what they did, I think is important. We oftentimes have this secondary emotion of anger when it's really just betrayal, and we're not communicating that to our kids. Or if your kid lies to you, we typically get angry, as an example. But the primary emotion there is your trust in your child breaking. Oftentimes, we're projecting far into the future of you need to be an honest person, you need to have courage, and they will not adopt that, in my opinion, if they are being shamed. And I just add that in there because I think it's a valuable. It's like, okay, you say hold on to your kids. What does that look like? It looks like you need to have a lot more energy to do that. If you're at your wits
Yeah.
end, you will not show up for them properly. You are going to get frustrated, raise your voice, all these things, and it's a challenge, but it's worth it.
So it's almost sound parenting begins with taking care of yourself. So you have the capacity to show up for your kids in a thoughtful way with the bandwidth to not just be reactive, to actually be able to respond to them. And yeah, I mean, we have a policy in our house that we're gonna, our daughter's only two, but our policy will be we will never get mad at you for telling us the truth. We might not be happy about what you tell us. We might be disappointed or frustrated or angry about the thing, but we will never be angry at you or punish you for telling us the truth, which I think is a way to open the door to say, we want you to feel comfortable confiding in us as your parents forever. Even telling us the really hard things that you're not proud of or think we might be upset about. I know that wasn't a thing in my family. So a lot of things were not told to our parents for fear of punishment. And yeah, I think it takes extra bandwidth to, again, remove yourself, to be able to observe from the outside the behaviors you're doing that may have been imported subconsciously, just downloaded from your own upbringing. And the only way that we can sort of disrupt this Passover of crappy parenting behaviors, I say crappy, but just maybe undesirable or unhealthy parenting behaviors, which were still the best that my parents could do with the circumstances they have. So I'm not upset about my parents or the way they parented us or the way they fed us or the way they went about things. I think it's a good thing technology didn't exist when I was growing up to the same extent it is now, because I think it would have had a profound effect on me if that same parenting style was applied in an era of dopamine slot machines in everyone's pocket. It would have been way worse. So I feel for parents right now who are under stress and have these slot machines available as a pacifier, right? Like kids have pacifiers when they're little, these soothers. It's like the phone has turned into a pacifier for a lot of teenagers. I feel just in observation. And then it's almost like when they grow up old enough to make their own decisions, it's like the vape is the pacifier, it seems like. And so it's like being able to be present with your kids and not just pacify them with something that gives them some distraction requires more time and patience and desire to actually be there for your kids and the capacity and bandwidth to do that. And I think that in all of this, the only thing I blame, if I'm going to blame something, is fraudulent currency that steals from people, because it just erodes everything in an exponential way. And then people's lives are seriously disrupted all the way down to the way the parents can be with their kids. Super sad. It's super nasty. It's so dark. It's some days like I really have to intentionally look at positive things, which there's an abundance of if you're looking for them. But when you really see the darkness for what it is, sometimes it's so confronting that people actually just dismiss it out of hand, because they're like, there's no way I've been, you have to I just talked about this with Alan in the podcast this morning. In order to get to the point where you accept that you've been stolen from your entire life, you have to be okay acknowledging that as true. It's very painful to fully acknowledge that you've been stolen from your entire life unknowingly. The easier thing is to just deny that as something that's not true and go about in your blissful ignorance and continue on. So it takes courage and curiosity and a willingness to subordinate yourself to truth and actually not just confirm what you currently know, to actually be like, things could be totally different than the way I've thought about them forever. You have to have a certain level of open-mindedness and curiosity and honesty with yourself to be able to accept those things. But on the other side of that is truth. And, in this case, honest money that doesn't steal from you and gives you a lifetime of dividends of surplus time and energy, by not being stolen from. And that's very powerful.
Yeah, I think we all pass through this kind of horrible, that understanding is is super painful, and it makes you really grumpy when you really kind of connect it to all the suffering in the world. It can really, it's not easy to confront it. It can be exhausting sometimes. Sometimes it's helpful to, like you say, just there's so many positives out there with it. Even just the fact that you found sound money, that it actually exists, is a miracle. Like,
Yes.
it is so cool that this thing exists. Otherwise, you're still in that system. So it's
Why
count our
don't we,
blessings.
why don't we, well, unless there's anything specific you want to go into, why don't we finish off with just tic-tac-toe? You go, I'll go, you go, I'll go. And we'll just share parenting principles that we've not in the sense of telling people what to do, but just sharing like some insights that we've learned from principles level that we're either applying or aspiring to apply in our own families. Because I think I often find there's a lot of teaching going on, but there's not enough sharing going on. And frankly, sharing is the best teaching, but it comes from a place of, sharing your experience instead of telling other people what to do and thinking you know better than them. So why don't we just go back and forth? Maybe we'll see how many we get to. Let's give three each, just because I think capping it forces us to really think through what those principles are. And maybe we do another podcast on parenting and these principles change, or maybe we give different principles. But let's keep them practical, like very pragmatic, applicable tomorrow, and more of a heuristic level principle, not a specific dictate sort of thing.
I'm happy to start if
Go
you
for it.
want.
Yes, please.
I think that apologizing when you screw up as a parent is super important. For whatever reason, that was not something that happened in my household growing up, and it was always I think that it's a great repair tool when you have overstepped, or if you're being grumpy or what have you with your kids, and just giving them the situation along those lines, expressing how you feel to your kids, as opposed to, like I said before, getting angry. There's also, I think, a valuable tool that I've used recently, which is it's opposite action, I think you could describe it as. It's basically, when you're exhausted and you come home and your kids want to play, you feel like, in order to preserve your resources, you maybe let them watch a show, or you tell them, "No, I'm too tired." But in my experience, that just leads to a sort of parenting downward spiral, and just doing opposite action and being like, "Okay, what would the best version of myself do? I would go and throw the ball with my kids." I always feel better when I do that. It always reverses my mood. It always improves my relationship with the kids. And so, not trying to defend your time seems counterintuitive to, because of, we're exhausted and we're working hard and all that. But I think that it actually will have the opposite effect. If you spend your time doing the harder thing, it makes you feel better. It makes the kids feel better.
Those are great. I think my big one of the principles is to take the time to develop clear values for yourself in life. Like, I think the word values gets tossed around a lot, but in very simple terms, it's what do you value? What is important to you? Because if you develop a clear value set and strive to live in alignment with that value set, you are going to be de facto downloading that value set into your kids because they will be learning by observation. Right? This idea that your kids are going to learn way more from you about life by watching you than they will about what you tell them. And I think that's super underrated. And then it forces you to be really clear on what matters to you so that you can act in alignment with the kind of person you want your kids to become. So our family has four values. And the reason we have these values is because if we're ever in a position where two things, a decision needs to be made, one or the other, the values always come first because we value them more than everything else. And our values are health, integrity, kindness, and play. Hiccup is the way to remember it.
Nice.
And part of health is family, right? But none of those values is work. Work is a necessary part of life. But if ever there is a conflict between health or family and work, health and family take priority. So have, I guess the principle is take time to intentionally develop a clear value set for yourself and how you want to live. And know that by living in alignment with those, you're probably doing automatically you're doing value, you're offering valuable parenting to your kids because they're just gonna be able, as long as your kids are around you enough. I guess that's the one asterisk there, right? You could be living in alignment with your values, but if your kids are always with their peers or at school or with other people, they don't have a chance to learn from you. So spend time with your kids, have clear values, and live in alignment with those values. That's mine. That was a drawn out one, but
No, it's good. The one that I come back to a lot is imagining that I'm 80 years old in the same situation that I see myself at with my kids. So projecting myself into the future, kind of looking back on the moment that I'm currently in, be it I'm frustrated with kids not getting ready for bed or getting ready for school or what have you. In my better moments as a parent, I find it's helpful, like when I have the resources to, I like to imagine myself back or being able to experience this moment one more time with my kids at a much later date, if that makes sense. And it offers perspective. I think that might be like a stoicism kind of principle, but I might be borrowing it from that. But it's just helpful to have the perspective, and it can completely reverse the course you're on if you're in a bad mood or if you're being short with them.
Love that. Before I became a dad, I sort of went around to all the people who I respect who have kids and asked them if you know, classic question, if you could go back in time before you had kids, knowing what you know now, what would you tell your previous self about parenting? And probably one of the best pieces of wisdom I got was from a cousin of a friend of mine. She had two kids at the time. I said, "What's your best cheat code for parenting?" And she said, "Always remember that everything is temporary." So the magical moments you have with your kids are going to be temporary. So you have to tune in and actually soak them in when they're there. Because if you dismiss them or miss them, you never get them back again. And then on the other side, the hardest things that you'll encounter, the hardest challenges that you'll encounter with your children are also temporary. And so you can just know that when you're in the midst of those moments, they're going to end. It is temporary. And that can give you some hope for the fact that, you know, you can endure it if you know it's temporary. If you think, because sometimes in the moment, it feels like the uncomfortable moment's going to last forever. And that makes it just really worse. So just remembering that everything is temporary, the good stuff's temporary, savor it, tune into it, because it won't come again. That exact moment won't come again. And when you're having real challenging, difficult times, like it's temporary, it's going to pass. Just remember that.
Great advice.
Let's do one more each.
Oh man, I wasn't even thinking of one. yeah, I mentioned honesty. I think radical honesty with your kids is a good practice. Yeah, my kids never believed in Santa Claus. I mean, that might make me a horrible parent. I don't know, but I just told them like it is. It's like, no, I don't personally believe in Santa Claus, but yeah, that's what evidence do you have for him? That kind of thing.
I share that, by the way. We told her, our daughter that Saint Nicholas was an old dude that gave stuff to people, but Coca-Cola created Santa Claus. And that is actually the Coca-Cola ran a campaign that created Santa Claus. And all
It's a
and most I mean, yeah.
great marketing campaign.
Clearly very effective.
Very catchy.
I think that plays into this idea that eventually your kids are going to learn the truth. Would you rather them realize that you lied to them? You know, in the short term, yeah, maybe they'll be upset when their friends believe in Santa Claus and you're just like, yeah, Santa Claus is not real. You know, that's the truth. But in the long term, they're just going to trust you more if you don't lie to them. Don't lie to your
Yeah.
kids and don't underestimate how much they can understand. You know, my daughter's two. She knows that men have penises and women have vaginas, and she says those words. And that's the truth. That's the biology, right? We don't have to sugarcoat it and tell her all these different things and then later tell her something different. She's gonna be like, well, that's confusing. You told me it was something before and now it's different. So
And
I
they'll just
think,
be embarrassed by their peers at some point.
yeah.
It's either they're going to be embarrassed by their peers at some point, or they will embarrass their peers at some point with the truth. And the Santa Claus example is a frivolous example, or actually it's not. Like, it is actually important to not feed your kids these strange cultural myths, but it's an example I bring up kind of tongue in cheek. But radical honesty in all moments, it's challenging. So I like struggle with a nicotine addiction. I don't When my kids are confused, like, "Hey, I thought you quit nicotine or whatever," it's a shameful experience, just as an example. But I will tell them, "No, I'm still struggling with it, and I'm trying really hard to quit, but I got back on it, and I think that, addictions and all sorts of issues that we struggle with survive in lies and the sooner your kids realize that, I think the better. And just being able to trust their parents is just going to be worth all of the uncomfortable conversations that you may have. And that's not to say you can't keep secrets. But if I am going to tell them, if they ask me something that I'm not comfortable telling them, I will say, I don't feel comfortable telling you that. Whereas usually there's some jujitsu language game we play with our kids to like out wrestle them in these situations that is completely pointless in my view. Just tell them the truth, or don't tell them, and just say, "I'm not telling you the truth," or, "Sorry, I'm not telling you what you're asking. You're not old enough." And they get it.
And it's a time preference thing. The easiest thing in the moment is to make up some weird fantasy or crap explanation. The harder thing is to tell them the truth because there might be more questions associated with that and there might be some hard realizations that they have to make. But in the long term, you're going to have to tell it to them eventually. Like your kids aren't going to live in a silo of your fantasies forever. So, my last one, which comes, it's interesting to talk about secrets because my wife created this rule and the more I thought about it, the more I really agree with it, and is that we don't keep secrets in our family. Like you said, there are things that we're not going to tell our daughter because she's not old enough to understand. Like it's not appropriate for her age to really learn about this. She doesn't need to know about it at this point, or she's just not mature to really wrap her head around that concept, which we can just honestly tell her. But the idea of we don't keep secrets in our family, and anyone who asks you to keep a secret, you tell us. Because I think a lot of crappy things that happen to kids get hidden behind the veil of secrets. And that was a new one for me. But the more I think about it, the more I realize like that is a really good principle to have in our family, to maintain transparency within our family. And I think you brought up again that point that you said where it's like, it's not like we're going to tell her everything, but we're going to be honest why we're not telling her something. We're not just going to make up some weird thing or say it's a secret that you can't know. So, I think those were good. I'm excited to re-listen to this one. And I think that if you're listening to this and you got to this point, thank you for hanging out with us and for your attention. We hope that there are a few nuggets in that conversation that maybe you can benefit from or that get you thinking differently. We're not claiming to be perfect parents. We are both still learning. And so, if you have any feedback to offer us, please comment on Noster when this podcast gets posted. If you don't know what Noster is, it's like social media without a big company running it. It's a protocol, and DM us and we'll show you where to learn more. And if you're a parent living on a sound money standard, and you have other parents that you talk to, record a conversation, send it to us. We'll pay you Bitcoin to send us your good conversations to post on this platform. The whole thing with the Orange Podcast is not just Lucas and I or a select group of people. It's we want to host conversations related to important topics, you know, health, parenting, finance, all that kind of stuff. So as long as you can sort of tether the conversation related to how sound money improves whatever topic or whatever thing you want to talk about, you have nothing to lose by just submitting the conversation. You can gain sats. The worst that can happen is it doesn't get posted, but you still had a great conversation, so it shouldn't matter. And the best that could happen is we share the conversation, you and your co-host get paid Bitcoin, and other people in the world somewhere benefit from your conversation, and it improves their lives, or maybe the lives of their family and community. So just wanted to put that out there. And anything to say before we wrap up?
No, thanks for listening.
Awesome. We'll catch you next time. Ciao.